This is episode 439. Suicide is the leading cause of death for men aged 15 to 44, and it's the third leading cause of death for men aged between 45 and 64. Why? Well, to be a man in this world right now is kind of confusing, especially young men trying to find their way in this world dominated by oppressive feminist narratives and toxic masculinity ideologies. And so if you're a man that feels like you need a bit of direction, or you're currently raising young men at home, then this conversation is worth listening to. Because I speak with a men's mentor, a man himself that overcame his own drug addiction, obesity and emotional eating issues, and familial trauma, to now be able to guide and mentor men, both young and old, to a life of greater purpose and fulfillment, which all funnels into you extracting a greater reason for being here. This is a real boots on the ground kind of conversation. So, all for one and one for all, let's get into it.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? It's my mission to coach 500 people to achieve real weight loss. And by real, I mean more than just the body fat. And we do it without calorie counting, doing embarrassing weigh-ins, or a naughty food list. None of that here. We do it very differently and likely unlike other food obsessive methods like calorie counting that you've done before. So if you want to experience real weight loss, then scroll to the show notes or the caption down below, click the link, and let's chat to see if we're a good fit to work together. Okay, so today in the studio, I've got Jack the Bear here for a chat on today's show, otherwise known more formally in a dinner setting as Tony Mance, who runs a music and sound mastering studio. And that's how I actually know Tony, is that believe it or not, I was or am a drummer and played in bands and did sessions for different musicians for 15 years or so. And I'm still trying to keep that dream alive in different forms, but something that many people listening to this podcast probably didn't know about me. But the reason I thought having Tony here, or Jack the Bear, would be an awesome idea is because over the years of us being friends on social media and Facebook, I've seen many of Tony's posts and videos speaking to young people about mental health, addiction, weight loss issues, and navigating the trials and tribulations of what can very easily become, for many of us, a really messy, depressing life. And I guess as well to throw some diet and health stuff in there, he's a man of the carnivore diet and that's helped him a lot. So we might get into a bit of that too, using it to solve a bunch of his inflammation and health challenges. So it's kind of a boots on the ground kind of mentor that we've got here. And I'm looking forward to diving into a bit of conversation. So welcome to the show, mate.
G'day, Matty. Good to be on. And thanks for the opportunity to chat with you. It took us a while.
It did. I had all sorts of my own trials and tribulations with moving house and a lack of internet and all sorts of annoying things, but we're here now.
We are indeed. Now, it's good to be here and looking forward to seeing what we uncover.
Yeah, me too. I've been admiring your work from afar for a little while. And, you know, I heard you some time ago on a podcast with Harps as well, Craig Harper, who I actually caught up with him for breakfast yesterday. And he's a good, I guess, mentor of mine as well. And it's been interesting just to see your own content out there and the amount of comments and people that are reacting. But I'm curious, starting in the music world and still very much in there, what got you into this mentor role that you seem to have naturally assumed?
I think it goes back to my early days of being mentored by wonderful engineers. As a youngster, looking through the glass with your nose pressed up against it and wanting to be a part of something that was a dream of mine, to work in music, I was very fortunate that from early on, I got really good advice and guidance from guys who owed me nothing. They didn't have to do anything for me. And yet they were so gracious and so generous in wanting to support me on my mission and answer my questions and, you know, become friends, I guess. And so I made a promise to myself very young, because when you're young, okay, I think one of the greatest things you can do for a young person is have them believe that you believe in them. And when you feel that from people, that's huge, because especially in life, rejection's a part of life. And when you're starting out in something, you're going to cop a lot of it. So when you come across people who embrace you, will give you the time of day, will give you that little bit of help. Those little kind words and actions can mean a lot. And so that had a huge impact on me. And so I made a pact with myself. And I said, self, I said, one day, if you ever get to any level of doing anything remotely close to this, you better make sure that you pay it forward and you help others. And so that's what really drove it, the being inspired by other mentors. And that adage of it's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice. And that character is who you are and reputation is what people think you are. And so when you can come across someone who you only know by reputation of what you've heard about or seen or read, and then that whole thing of like, don't meet your heroes. So how important it is and how impactful it is that you as a person, particularly if you have some kind of profile and people have an expectation of you, not that you're trying to live up and bullshit to the expectation, but you genuinely and authentically are the person that they perceive you to be. And if they perceive you in a positive light, be that positive person. Be that person that's going to help, you know, where you can. So that's how that all developed. And I remember seeing online, you know, lots of youngsters who were getting on the forums, particularly gear sluts, and a lot of newbies that would go on and engineers that would shut them down or kind of say, oh, don't ask stupid questions. And it really upset me. So I would get in there and become a head kicker of sorts and starting to have a go at some of these engineers and just remind them, hey, you were there once upon a time. You were that guy. And somebody helped you, I'm sure. Yes, you are self-made, and yes, you did all the work, and yes, you created what you created. But nobody just went through it without any assistance at all. I refuse to believe that. And so it's important to humble yourself and remember where you came from and that you started and that, again, like I said, the impact that it had on me was profound. And so that's why I said, if I ever get in a position where I achieve something, I'm going to make sure that I'm going to help, you know, as many people as I can, you know, within reason. There are some people that you can't help, but for the most part, just to be, I think at the very least to acknowledge people and try and answer the question, just something, you know, because that little interaction can be huge. I know it was for me because the amount of times that I wanted to give up and then a mentor of mine would say something or remind me of something and then all of a sudden, boom, things turned around for me. All of a sudden, it was enough of a shift that allowed me to continue on a different trajectory.
Yeah. I love that you were inspired by your own mentors. That says a lot about them, I think, that you wanted to one day grow up and embody how they showed up for you.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, we perceive people to be a certain way. And when you are a unknown, you're new, the typical, speaking for myself, my attitude was, well, they probably won't talk to me. Who am I? I'm not important. I don't have any relevance in their world. And to be completely surprised that the treatment I got from people, you know? So, and that to me said a lot about who they are. This is why I said before that character is who you are. Reputation is what people think you are.
Yeah.
And when those two things actually can be in alignment, then I think you're doing okay.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that idea of don't meet your heroes, because the illusion of what you're aspiring to be like, or you know, you want to mimic what somebody's doing in the world, and that's that idea of not meeting your heroes. Maybe it's starting to break a little with the podcast world and how authentic a lot of people show up these days. But did you have any experiences where you met some of your heroes or your guides or your mentors, and you saw a really human side of them that kind of broke that mentor perspective?
I wouldn't say that it broke any perspective. I would say that it was just refreshing to see realness in these people. And look, of the mentors who I consider to be the most influential, they're quite different as people. You know, some are a bit more out there, some are a little bit more reserved in terms of their personalities. But the fact that they were still willing to help and make themselves available and generally want to assist was the common thread, and just really honest about things. You know, people always want to put the glossy side, the success side about how good they may be. But I found that, you know, these guys were also quite honest about where they failed and where they mucked up, because often, you know, I can't say, look, something's gone wrong. I'm feeling bad about this, or this happened with a client. And so, look, don't worry about it. You know what? This has happened to me as well. And this is how I handled it. And it's going to happen again. And it's okay. So again, just being honest in talking about their failings or where they went wrong, you know, that real authenticity was very, I guess, surprising. Because as I said, people for the most part want to present their best side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's hard not to. It's part of our defense mechanisms in a way to say to strangers, people we don't know very well, I am enough. I can meet you on the same level, you know, until we feel truly comfortable with someone. Most of us don't feel good showing the vulnerable side because it presents a weakness or a place for attack, especially if you don't know that other person well.
Mm. And again, it's all a perception, right? I believe that people that are honest, people relate to it because, again, it shows that you're human. You know, again, people elevate people to a certain level and it's all in their mind, it's all artificial. But when they see realness in people and honesty and some vulnerability, most people can relate because now they're thinking, oh, okay, we're a bit more on the same level. And therefore, I can probably do what they're doing and achieve what they're doing, despite my fears and trepidation about what I'm trying to get, you know, what I'm trying to achieve.
Do you think there's a situation where, or at least the stage of life, where we need that perfect image to aspire to raise us to a standard that's beyond maybe what we thought was possible? Because I'm just playing with the idea in my head at the moment that, you know, once we start seeing how real everybody is, that also opens up a possible window of excuses that mean I don't have to try too hard. My mentor's got some bad shit going on in his life as well. You know, so like I find for myself, sometimes the illusion of perfection continues me climbing the ladder to try and reach a level, knowing that I'll never be perfect. And obviously, I know enough about the world to know they're not perfect either. But if I don't know any of the bad things, I can focus on the good and keep climbing and working rather than saying, oh, we're all a bit messed up. I'm going to take a break today. I won't work as hard today.
No, I don't think so. I don't think that way. And as you said, there is no perfection. Nobody is perfect. Even though people may strive for what they think is perfect, there's only what's perfect for you, I guess. I don't use that as an excuse because I don't think of it like, well, I'm never going to be able to climb the top of Everest from a standing start and jump over it. So what's the point? I'm still going to make an attempt to do something. Again, this is the whole myth of people thinking about endpoints and destinations that you need to reach something when there's a series of destination points. There's an ongoing process. It's forever going. So embracing the journey, embracing the process more than actually thinking about reaching any particular level. These levels are stepping stones towards continual growth that you said. So I don't get despondent about the fact that I will never reach perfection. I'll never get 100%. I'll never. It doesn't matter. And this leads me to a beautiful story, which I'll share with you, that I love to tell kids, especially the artistic creative kids, which is the story or the curse of the white rabbit. Now, we know about greyhounds that chase rabbits around a track, yeah?
Yeah.
Now, the rabbit is the metaphor for what people are chasing. Is it validation? Is it acceptance? Is it awards? Is it love? All these things. And how many times, barring a technical difficulty, does the greyhounds ever chase the rabbit?
Oh, how many times does the greyhound chase the rabbit?
Barring a technical fault.
Every time it gets in the ring.
Does it always get the rabbit?
No.
They don't?
No, they never catch it.
They never catch it?
Yeah.
Do you know why?
Because it's an illusion that we're able to actually attain that level of perfection or achievement.
Yeah. It's also set up, though. It's also set up that way. It's deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, I don't know about you, but I've never met a greyhound that despite the fact it's chasing and it never, ever, ever catches the rabbit, that'll say the next week when they take it to the track, fuck this, too hard, I'll never catch the bloody thing, what's the point, I'm not going to run.
Yeah.
Right? And you know why? Because they're born to run. They're born for the chase in the same way that artistic creative people are here to create, right? So it's not going to be about the awards. It's not going to be about the validation, although people, we like these things. But if your main reason is to achieve validation outside of yourself, rather than embrace the process and understand that, hey, I'm in it, I'm doing it, I'm enjoying this, all the other things just become a lovely embellishment. Mate, I got a hallway full of gold and platinum records, right? And they're great. I'm not going to lie to you. Of course, they're great. And they add to your market perception that you're good. I remember particularly one day when I got the band called The Neighborhood I did in America. It went double platinum, right? 2 million sales. Probably the most successful commercial thing that I've done in my career. Very proud of that, okay? Particularly being an American band. I got it. I was excited. I was rapt. I was thrilled. I flexed on Instagram. I did all that shit. You know, here I am. Look at me. But, you know, later on that evening, I scrubbed the toilet and I took out the wheelie bin. Mm-hmm. Life just went back to normal. You know what I mean? I didn't allow myself to, my self-worth to be attributed to this sort of stuff. Because if you fall down that slippery slope, you're never going to be happy. So this is why it's important that I'm so big on this idea of process and just getting in amongst it, because a lot of people are very unsatisfied with their work and their life and would look at people thinking, oh, geez, I'd love to be able to do that, but don't even have the gumption to try, you know, because, again, they don't feel they're good enough because of their programming and they're thinking about, you know, or they're doing it for the wrong reason. And that's why people like that don't last, because all these awards, look at something like a Grammy Award. There's only one award and so many people competing for, you know, so many nominations. Not everyone's going to win, right? Yeah. So if you don't win the prize and all of a sudden you think you're shit, it's not a good place to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious, do you think, and I mean, it's hard to know since we both weren't alive 500 years ago or even 100 years ago, but do you feel like there's more of a need now to share this kind of message? Because maybe social media or the amount that we're connected or the amount that we're advertised to or marketed to, or, you know, and it's often the role of marketing and advertising is usually to highlight our weaknesses so that it moves us to buy, to solve that problem. Because we're seeing these advertisements hundreds of times a day on social media and we're seeing all of everybody else's highlight reel, do you think there's more of a need now than ever for us to disconnect from external validation?
Oh, more than ever. Absolutely. I mean, that's the biggest problem in the world is, and this is the biggest cause, I think, of people's unhappiness is because they're comparing themselves to others.
Yeah.
And they're worrying about other people. I did a video the other day about it. I said the lesson that I wish I'd learned sooner, or more to the point, I actually got, because I always had the intellectual understanding, always knew it up here in the theory, but it never connected here. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it sunk in and I integrated this message as a knowing,
yep,
as an absolute know. I was rock fucking solid with it, okay? And that is the worrying about what people think about you, mm-hmm, you know, and understanding that you are enough. You're fine the way you are. And, you know, explaining the whole process as to why people, they become this way. And it's not because people are bad, because I was guilty of it myself. It took me over 50 years to get it, Matty, all right? So I'm a late bloomer, dude. I'm not coming at this from some place of I'm, you know, holier than thou and better than you. It took me way longer than it needed to, but at least I finally got it. So in answer to your question, now more than ever, yeah, because now we're being bombarded more with social media. We've got constant reminders that we're no good. People are believing what they're seeing online, again, with people using their angles and their filters and rather than just being okay with being who they are, because deep down, we know the same, and this is why I said to you, the more raw, honest, vulnerable, authentic you can be, the more relatable you are, because people see themselves in you. They can, you know, they can see these traits and understand you, and you become more approachable. You become, you know, if you really want to try and market yourself to people, you know, focus on the sausage and not the sizzle. But people are afraid. I get it. Again, this is not a judgment on others, and I'm not bringing people down, because I was the same and I went through it way longer than I needed to. And until you get to that point where you legitimately drop all that bullshit, allow yourself to be okay with who you are, to be comfortable in your own skin, to understand that you're okay and you're never going to win everyone over. It's a game you'll never win. So just accept that. Be okay with that. Then people will relate to you a lot more, and you'll be much more attractive to others as well. And ironically, all that validation that you were trying to find through all these means actually will come more naturally and organically to you without having to try, because now you're radiating at a different frequency that people can, you know, relate to and go, oh, wow, I really like this person. I like what they're talking. I like their approach. I people like each other because they either see traits that they admire, either in them or even in themselves. In the same way, when we see people that we don't like, what is it? Unresolved stuff within ourselves. Mm-hmm. It's all triggering our internal shit that we haven't looked at, worked on, and tried to integrate. The same reason.
Surely there's a degree of validation which is required. And what I mean by that, because we're pack animals, right? We need to have a sense of belonging. So my question is it more about who we seek the validation from rather than quantity, million followers that we don't even know, don't even care about? Or is it like four or five close people that we respect that are ahead of us in the game of life? Because without any input from external factors, you end up with those people that totally separate themselves from a society and go sort of a bit wild. And there's, you know, coming to mind is like the incel community, that group of young men that are, extremely disaffected, you know, that need help,
yeah, sure.
need help, but they need, mm-hmm. they need to connect with and get validation from people that are doing well.
Yeah. Look, validation is something that we need. Connection, of course. We, you know, if you go back in the day, we went around, but we do know that we were living in smaller tribes, and if you were shunned from the group, it pretty much meant death.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, and in our mind, we get rejected by people online or get hate. For many of us, it can feel that way. And so you do get, but, you know, it's an interesting concept, the incels. And this may sound a bit harsh, but I believe that we are all responsible for our life. Yes, there are things that can happen that are out of our control. But for the most part, I think a lot of people that are incels are victims. And we have too much victim mentality. These are the people. These are the people that live through the lens of life happening to me. Everything happens to me. Oh, my God. This is what, and complaining and shifting blame, right? Now, I'm not going to sit here and say, well, someone, you know, got cancer. You should take personal responsibility. It's all your fault. I'm not that cruel. But still, we all have to take some level of personal responsibility and try and do something about it. And I think for a lot of incels, they live in that world of being victims, and they blame women, or they blame society, or they, again, I don't know many of them that'll sit there and honestly appraise themselves and go, you know what, maybe I need to do something about my diet. Maybe I need to do something about getting out there and being a bit proactive. Maybe I need to try a different tack. And so it's easy. And again, I lived a lot of my life through victim mode too, okay? So again, I'm not judging these people. This is just an observation. And I did it myself, because it's easy to be able to shift blame on others where you don't have to take responsibility for your world. Like, well, in my case, I blame my dad. My dad was, it rained. It was my dad's fault. You know, I had diarrhea. It was my dad's fault. It didn't matter. It was always my dad's fault, or somehow it was going to relate back to my dad, the way I behaved, the way I carried myself, my attitude towards life, everything. And until I finally got it and stopped blaming him, and took some responsibility for my own life, that things start to change. Now, so people in the incel community, I'm sorry that you're in that situation, but most of you, I think, need to have a good hard look at yourselves. Yeah, you know, as I said, I think it starts in nutrition, and then getting some exercise, doing things, you know, stop playing video games and jerking off to porn, and doing something a bit more constructive in your life. And by taking small steps, you'll find that you'll move on better, and you'll be able to be a better version of yourself and attract the things that you want in your life. I truly believe that, because similar, my boat.
I think it's a very easy chapter of history to be a victim. And it kind of goes back to that comment I made about all the validation online, because, you know, whether these days you got people that they cry on camera, on social media to thousands of their followers, but they don't express the real emotion to the person that's actually, you know, the true vulnerability is sitting in the room with the person you've got hard things to say to, or you know, looking in the mirror and having somebody else say, there's some things about you that are a bit shit, that are really damaging and toxic that you need to work on. That's real vulnerability. But now it's so easy to be a victim. You get online, you tell your story, or you're literally in your story, and you just get all these comments from people that support you and they confirm this narrative that you have about yourself. And then you even get trapped in your Instagram identity for way longer than that emotion or experience should have taken, because the validation is now connected to this version of yourself. And so I think it's so difficult to escape that victim mentality when people have built Instagram empires on them being the sufferer.
Yeah, absolutely. Identity is a very big, powerful thing. How you see yourself, because the way you see yourself is the way others will see yourself, because you're going to act that way. And I'm not saying that you have to create a fake identity around yourself. It's just about being honest in who you are. And so we carry lots of different identities, yeah? But we have certain primary, you know, I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm an audio engineer, you know, a mentor, you know, the identity I have are various. I don't have one. If there is one identity that is welded onto my chest, if you will, is the I am. I am. That's it, right? Which, again, for the spiritual people, they'll understand that. You know, the way I see it right now, I'm an eternal being having a brief human experience. That's my identity. I don't want to put myself in the box. But in order to relate to the world, yes, there are all these other identities that I can, you know, with Velcro, I can interchange depending on the situation I'm in. Mm-hmm. Okay. So identity is very powerful. And, you know, earlier on, you're talking about you're doing this whole weight loss, this thing. It's a bit of a tangent, but now that we're on identity, I really want to hammer this point home.
Yeah, let's go.
Particularly in the context of people who are trying to lose weight. I know you talked a bit before about not counting calories and not banning the naughty food and all that kind of stuff. And that's all well and good. But where people get it wrong, and I'll speak from my own too and from my own experience. The real game changer, because I went through my life yo-yoing, particularly in my 30s after I got married. Every time I started, you know, getting rid of weight, I'd look at myself and go, wow, this looks good. Oh, now I can wear these jeans, or I can wear this shirt again, or what have you. And I could see it and, you know, and really enjoy that experience. But something here subconsciously and in my heart was saying, no, you're still a fat fuck, right? Because I still had that identity of not being a fit person. This is why I say, Maddie, you will never achieve and maintain a fit body with a fat personality. And this is why people yo-yo and they go up and down, because they cannot embrace that identity. They have to change their peer group. Again, who are the people you hang out with? They have a massive influence in your life. So you can lose all this weight, but if you're going to be around a bunch of obese, unhealthy people who are being victim, guess what? It's going to come back, because by osmosis, you just can't help it. Whereas when you start to change the people in your life, you start, you know, change your habits, because we're creatures of habit. We just run unconsciously most of the day. So when we start doing those things through repetition, it's just, again, it's got to happen consciously. You got to do it consciously. In the same way, you know, driving a car, you're consciously thinking, oh, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. And then you get to a point through muscle memory, right, that now the driving becomes automatic. You're driving a car, eating a hamburger, putting on your makeup, talking on the phone with one foot on the wheel, right? Easy, without even thinking about it. So the same thing with the weight loss. You know, people need to adopt this identity, and that takes work. That takes a lot of work. You really got to go deep to go into that stuff that's holding you back. So same thing with drug addicts. You know, you got to change your peer group. You got to learn new habits. You got to do these new things. But again, it's like, now I'm going to say something here, and this is not, I don't want to have a go at anyone that does 12-step and AA or NA, okay?
Yep.
I think they're a great organization. They do wonderful things. But here's where I think they get it wrong. This very big fundamental point, and I may get some blowback for this, but that's fine. You go to an AA meeting, because I did it before, right, when I was hooked on drugs, give it a go. You go to these meetings. You sit down with the person who's leading the group. G'day, I'm Walter, and I'm an addict. Now, this Walter's been clean for 30 years.
Yeah.
But he still identifies as an addict. So he's living his life completely in this level of anxiety, because I get it. It's like, well, I'm only one step away from falling off the wagon and relapsing. It's like, is that a way to live? Like this constant kind of fear, because now taking responsibility is one thing. Okay, I'm an addict. I need help. I can't do this on my own. Great. Okay. Again, you're now taking some responsibility. You're asking for help. You want to be proactive. You want to do something about it. But after 30 years, my friend, you are no longer an addict. That's a yeah. former life. In the same way that I was a former addict and I was a former obese person and former depressed and all this kind of stuff. It was in my past. I'm looking ahead, mate, right? I'm on the road of life. I'm going ahead. Rivers run one way. Rivers don't go backwards, right? I'm driving forward. Now, I've got a rearview mirror, which I'll occasionally look in, which gives me some context as to how far I've come in life. But if I keep looking in the rearview mirror, guess what? I'm going to crash.
Yep.
So I've got to keep looking ahead and be focused. Looking into the past is good for reference. It allows you to see the distance you travel because you know what? So many of us go through life, Maddie, and we're always striving and we always want to do better and there's always room to improve. That's a given. And it's great to have aspiration. It's great to be motivated. It's great to be inspired in that. But every now and again, how many people actually stop? Just pause for a moment, take stock, have a look to see how far they've come and celebrate that. Because people, again, they're too focused on the forward, important as it is. So looking in the past is helpful. It provides context. It gives you reference. And it will give you, I think, inspiration to continue on your path. Because now, you know, because everyone started at some point, right? And they can underestimate how much progress they've made, you know? So after a period of time, it's like people that go through massive weight loss. People aren't going to see the difference in about a week or two or a month. It's usually, you know, they'll take a photo 3 months, 6 months down the track that they, and then they'll go back to see the old one. They go, oh, wow. You know?
Do you want to know how to lose weight without counting calories or needing to use restrictive diets? Turns out the answer is on Instagram. You might be interested to know that over 70% of our paying clients begin their journey with a weight loss goal. Most of them achieve this goal without fad diets and without calorie counting. And in the process, they also rewire their brains to stop craving sugar and they stop their secret binge eating sessions without the need to use loads of willpower. Why does what we do work? Because the fat that you want to lose, it isn't just about the calories you're consuming. It's actually wild how differently we do things. We work on your mind and your body gets better. And I think more people need to know about how we can do this for you too. Which is exactly why I'm back on Instagram as The Real Weight Loss Coach. If you want to know how to really drop the weight that's been holding you down, how to keep it off, and to stay healthy long into the future, then follow me on Instagram. The link to my profile is in the show notes below, or you can search for me on Instagram by typing in The Real Weight Loss Coach. Give me a follow and I'll chat to you in the comments and the DMs over there.
I completely agree about the identifying as an alcoholic or an overeater or a debtor or, you know, there's so many 12-step programs because I think I've probably talked about it on this show before. The fact that, yeah, you get stuck in that identity. And it's just interesting that you bring up that your experience of sort of, you know, it's hard to be a fit person in a fat person with a fat personality because the core of the work that we do, and that's why we call it real weight loss, is helping people change their identity. Because it's like, yeah, we're kind of cut from the same cloth here in that sense that it's you'll yo-yo until you believe you're worthy of or able to embody the way that a healthy, fit person thinks, you know, or behaves or responds. So, you know, we're totally in alignment with all of that stuff. And, you know, so many people get hit with the, again, on social media, the marketing of the short-term stuff, the really quick stuff. And it's appealing. We all want to go faster. Like everybody wants to go faster. But inevitably, they end up either back where they started or worse than where they started. But I'm curious for you, when you said, you know, that there was that voice in the back of your head or in your heart that was speaking to you, sort of saying, "Nah, you know, you're not going to get healthy, you're not going to lose weight, you're not going to stop being an addict." What did it take to change that?
Well, I got to thank my mentor Peter Sage for this. He's the one that really drilled this whole concept into me, and it's the one that made the most sense. So, you know, I could never understand why I would keep relapsing or why I would, because I never liked being overweight and I didn't particularly enjoy being an addict. I really didn't. Mm-hmm. And I think any person that is a hostage to drugs, if they're honest, will tell you that they don't enjoy it. But it's something that seems familiar. But again, it's not something that you consciously understand until, and again, speaking for myself, until the concept was introduced to me and explained to me, I had a big aha moment and realized, okay, all this work that I've done with counselors and whatnot, while it was helpful, it didn't really help me achieve long-term success in what I was trying to achieve, mm-hmm. right? So, and again, until I adopted the identity and took ownership of it and believed it to be true and a knowing, it was just unshakable as to who I am, then the other stuff was just going to be taking care of the symptoms, not actually getting to the cause of what the problem was. Yeah.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, it's a, it doesn't happen overnight, that kind of stuff, hey?
No, but also you becoming obese or becoming a drug addict, it wasn't an overnight journey either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it takes a long time. It takes a lot of effort to become obese.
Mm.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a big commitment.
You know, it is. So, you know, again, we just assume that these things happened overnight and they're going to be repaired overnight. The world right now is getting faster exponentially. And so we want, and we are getting more and more things happening faster. We're able to get, I mean, you know, 10 years ago, this idea of having food delivered to you and just having all this shopping at the press of a button and all this choice and all this luxury available to you wasn't there. And so we think that all other things in life should happen. So hang on a minute. If I can do this at the press of a button, and get things going really quickly, again, why shouldn't everything else happen that quick?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we make this mistake of thinking that, and then we get disappointed.
Yeah, inevitably. I'm curious, you said before as well that like nutrition would be one of the first variables that needed to change. So I'm curious for you, where did you realize that nutrition was tied to your outcomes in life or your mental health or your capacity to make good decisions?
Well, a long time ago, I mean, people would always talk about calories in, calories out. And I've learned that while fundamentally there's something to be said about, you know, calorie deficit, there's nothing wrong with that theory. But I'm a great believer in don't count the calories, make the calories count. And then about what kind of calories you're consuming. But as someone who is, I've always been curious, I like to learn things. And I think just watching lots of different podcasts by different people and trying to piece together, you know, find what was, you know, what seemed to resonate, but more importantly, just trying things. I just experimented with stuff. And as a result, when it comes to nutrition, I do believe that nutrition is fundamental.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the diseases that we have today in the modern world are preventable. They usually come down. And again, now, before I continue, I'm just a caveat, kids. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a nutritionist. I have no qualification to dispense advice. I'm not dispensing advice. I'm just going to share with you what I found worked for me and what my experience is, and that's it. So please don't give me the, well, what do you know, mate? You've been watching Dr. Google. So before I go on, I just want to get that out of the way because it's important. Because see, this is the world we're living in now, mate. Everyone's just going to look at hating, trolling, taking pot shots. So I'm just putting that out there. So from my understanding, and most of the diseases that we have today are preventable and primarily because of poor metabolic health, whether it's cancer, dementia. Now, yes, people can have some kind of genetic predisposition that may lean them towards a certain thing, but for the most part, it comes down to poor nutrition. Now, again, I don't have the stats to show you and all the evidence at hand in the white papers, but I think it's fair to say that 100 years ago, before all the processed food and all the shit that we have on the shelves in supermarkets, mm-hmm. we didn't have the same amount of cancer and obesity and dementia. We just didn't.
Yeah.
We just didn't. It's only been something that's really come to the fore, and each year it just seems to get worse and worse. And if you just have a look at what, especially in the West, what most people eat, we're eating high processed food, high sugar food, stuff that comes in a packet because it's cheap, it's convenient. Go to a supermarket, see how it's all set up. This isn't conspiracy theory. Go to any supermarket and have a look at what the layout's like. All the good stuff, all the stuff that's natural and real and not processed is going to be out on the, you know, on the outer perimeter and right smack back in front of you, right at eye level, it's all there, you know, to attract you. I mean, there's a lot of science that goes behind food manufacturing and food marketing. You know, people on Madison Avenue, they spend a lot of money to understand human psychology and how to get you, right? And how to make it easy for you to sort of eat this stuff, because they just want to make money. They don't care.
Yeah.
They just don't care. They're all about making profit. And we've got a pharmaceutical industry that doesn't want you to be well. Look, I'm not anti-pharma. There are times that, you know, I was glad that I had some pain relief when I had a toothache or something like that. But again, there's no profit in curing people. We need to manage your symptoms, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're sick, constantly sick, got constantly going things going on, well, that's great for them, because you know what? The cash registers go ka-ching, because they need customers, and they need you to be unwell. They need you to have things going on. So when you got a food industry that is making people sick, and then you got people with a solution, it just becomes this, you know, this carousel that you'll never get off. So, you know, look, again, people may think this is all conspiracy. I would suggest that you look into it. Go to your supermarket and have a look at the layout. These things are done purposely in the same way that you go to a shopping center and it's all laid out a certain way. Casinos is all laid out a certain way, you know, for a reason, because they're there to capture you, keep you there, make money, just exploit you, you know? So going back to this whole, you know, disease thing, I think a lot of diseases can be prevented or certainly mitigated by good, clean nutrition. So the rule of thumb, I'm a carnivore, but the rule of thumb I give people who I coach with weight loss is if it came in a packet or came in a box, don't touch it, you know? Just don't touch it. Get food that's real, that's natural, and that hasn't been processed. And start getting used to cooking your own food and preparing your own meals. You know, again, you know, people, I haven't got time. I don't buy that excuse. I really don't. And again, if you have an identity of being a fit, healthy person, guess what? You're going to do these things. They'll become natural to you. They're part of your blueprint. It's just how you operate in the world. That's the operating system that you're running. That's the program in your computer, the software.
I think the good news is that you're speaking on the right podcast, and no one's going to think you're a conspiracy theorist with any of that stuff. Everybody listening will be like, "Yep, that's, you know." So you've got the right audience.
I think it's becoming a badge of honor now, conspiracy theorist for people.
Yeah,
it's interesting, isn't it? It's interesting, isn't it? How, you know, it was the CIA that coined that term after the whole Kennedy assassination to try and divert people away from potentially the truth. You know, you're saying something that goes against the narrative and you're a conspiracy theorist. Like, it's, you know, it's become so diluted now, it means nothing. You know, really, I'm not even insulted by it anymore, but it gets bandied about a lot. It's people's go-to, right? When they want to push back, you're a conspiracy theorist, no matter what it is you're talking about.
It reminds me of the, you know, when you run out of legitimate arguments, you attack the character of the person. And so it's basically that, right? They've got nothing useful to come back with. So they say conspiracy theorist. And it's like, you know, they're attacking
Or racist. Or you're a racist,
yeah.
You know, or what have you. And this is why when you start resorting to insults, you've lost the argument.
Yeah.
You've lost the debate. You're done. And it's a shame to see the world has become more combative. We're seeing a lot more adversarial stuff online. And again, I think social media loves that kind of stuff. That's, again, what are they about? Engagement.
Yeah.
Because they want to get advertisers and eyeballs on screen and clicks and all this kind of stuff. So it's unfortunate. And this is why I said to you before, I don't want to get into controversial topics. I'm not interested in debating people about anything. I'm happy to, you know, share ideas. And it's not that often that you can actually engage with people in a respectful discourse, particularly people that hold the contrarian views to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's become so. This is why I just don't bother, and I don't really bother trying to push or become a poster boy, if you will. You know, this is why I say online, Matty. And in fact, I've got it pinned up on the top of my Facebook, and which is everything I share online is an invitation for you to consider if you're open to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not here to try and push any idea, maybe trying to, it's just sharing in the hope that maybe someone might be interested in checking it out for themselves and it might influence them in a positive way. But other than that, I'm not interested in getting debates on anything.
Yeah. I'm happy to do that for you. I don't, especially about the things that the reason this podcast was started was very much in an energy of trying to fight back against big agriculture, big sugar, big pharma. You know, I worked in hospitals for years. So, and the good news is that I don't need to put any of the disclaimers out there because people pay me for this advice. So I'm happy to go toe to toe with anybody that wants to throw around science. Yeah. But yeah, when you obviously start throwing insults around, then you've lost the plot a little bit. But if it's science or facts or enough anecdotes that it makes sense that we should look at it, then I'm in. I'm all in. So, but I was gonna say too, before we sort of head towards wrapping this conversation up, it's a very weird time in the world to be a man. And my partner Yali, she is a relationship coach, got a background in psychology, and we talk a lot about masculine and feminine and the way that men and women show up differently in this modern world. But I wanted to ask you, for any men that listen, and we got thousands of them, and there's heaps of parents and mums that listen that have got young boys, what do you want to say to men or people that are raising men right now?
Well, I'm a great believer that young boys need good men in their life. Now, we're living in a world where a lot of young boys don't have fathers around or good male figures around. This is why we're seeing, you know, young kids who join gangs because they want a sense of belonging. They look up to people for the wrong reasons. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying, you know, mothers are heroes. Single mothers are heroes. But trying to be a mum and a dad, as much as you try, it's hard just being a mum, let alone trying to be a dad. You know, women, you know, can have masculine energy and can portray the masculine energy, but they're not men. I'm sorry. You know, there are men and there are women. Now, you may have a view that you feel that you are different, and I respect you to having that view, but I still believe that young boys need good men, strong men with good character in their world because kids emulate, right? And I think men and women are fundamentally different. It's just how it is. And so you can have your social constructs. That's fine. But young boys need good, healthy men, role models, whether it's an uncle, a family friend, a mentor, whatever. It's so important that they get that from a very young age because, you know, particularly the first 7 years of life. I mean, the Jesuits say, show me the boy at seven. I'll tell you the man. Most of our program is locked in by the age of seven. That's true. And we're going to go through life with that thinking. You know, this is why, you know, when we're adults, but really so much of our decision-making is made through the lens of a child. Mm-hmm. And whatever your experience was at that age, that's how you're going to project until you actually start doing the work and start changing things around. So I don't do a lot of work with young boys, but I do stuff with young men and middle-aged men. I'm very passionate about that. And, you know, again, I tip my hat to mums. They're incredible. They're heroes in society, unsung heroes as far as I'm concerned. But young boys do require their mothers, but they also require some good, solid men in their life to help guide them along in life, especially when they're very young. Very important.
Yeah. I totally agree. It's an interesting space, and this idea of toxic masculinity's been, you know, they've been kicking that can down the road for some years. But the irony is that the more into, I guess, my masculine I get, and you know, not far away from being a father, and you know, I'm a business owner, and all of these things, the more that the social media or feminist idea of what toxic masculinity is how I try and show up most days, which is strong to lead. If I don't actually access my aggression in a healthy way, then that's a bad thing for everybody around me. So I need competitive sport. I need to go to the gym. And for a long time, through my own sort of healing victim journey that we all go through for a chapter, however long that chapter is, I, you know, thought I was meant to suppress that and feminize myself and talk, you know, and be really, really connected to my feelings. And I think I needed that, honestly, to do the healing. But on the other side, I feel the call back to maybe my teenage self in a grown body, in the sense that competition's okay, wanting to lead is okay, wanting to dominate is okay, but it's all just got to be done in a healthy container. And it's obviously having people to look up to that do that in a healthy container, whether it be in a business context or a sport context or whatever, rather than when you get home from work and, you know, you put your family in a mess because of your mood or temper, or you've got no healthy outlet for those masculine or darker parts of yourself. Yeah, it's just an interesting chapter of time to go through. I think the feminizing of men has been a bit of a, let's say, an agenda or whatever it is for some time. But I'm sort of coming out the other side thinking I'm pretty comfortable being this masculine man that opens doors for women and provides resources and money and stuff like that.
Yeah. Look, and nutrition plays a part in that. I mean, young men now, their testosterone levels are dropping. And is it interesting too that even men who are going through middle age, there's so much work. We accept that women go through menopause, and so women will get support, which they need to, and get hormone replacement to level them out and deal with that. But men go through the same thing. But you don't see many doctors that will check men, and not many men go and check their testosterone when they're in their 40s and 50s to try and balance out. You know, the nutrition, the pollution, the world, the toxicity in the world is all bringing men in terms of their hormone levels is dropping, and so that's, I think, part of them probably feminizing as well.
Yeah,
and again, the lack of good men in their environment. Things have to be balanced, Matty. I think it was Aubrey Marcus that said that you got to be able to hold a newborn baby in one hand and be gentle with it, and then slit the throat of someone, you know, if they're going to kill you with the other, and to be able to dance between those two points, as you alluded to before, the healthy container. But again, I think that we've been told that anything that is traditionally masculine is now toxic. There's no toxic masculinity. There's just toxicity, whether you're a man or a woman. You know, it's not the exclusive domain of men. It gets highlighted a lot. I understand it. And sure, there are men that need to do work and whatnot, but it's not, we don't have exclusive rights. We don't have the monopoly on toxicity. You know, it's everywhere.
Totally. I'm glad you brought up the testosterone thing too. We did an episode 239 of this show which I literally titled Why Men Have Low Sex Drive and Hate Their Lives. And it was about the sort of arguably the pandemic of low testosterone that we're having. And there's a phrase you might have heard, but our listeners have definitely heard me say it. But it's these days where a third of the men that our grandfathers were, because the levels of our testosterone have dropped so much. And the thing that people should know too is that when you go to the doctor to get tested and they say you're normal, that data is calculated upon the current average man. And the current average man is a third of the man his grandfather was. So even if the doctor says, oh, you're in the normal range, you're probably low. And I totally agree that the food we eat, the water that's not filtered, you know, get a filter, that's an easy solution. All of those things play into, you know, adding estrogenic compounds to our body, so feminizing it and lowering that testosterone and the sex drive and the depression goes up and doom scrolling on our phones all the time. All of it is lowering the testosterone.
Yeah. And not being active. And I can tell you that having been on this carnivore diet, my testosterone has risen as a result. It's really quite extraordinary as to how it's really affected my hormone level and hormone function.
Mm-hmm.
So again, this whole diet, dude, you know this yourself. The amount of estrogen that's in the water supply because of you know, birth control.
Yeah.
Right? Again, not a conspiracy. It's for real, you know. I'm sorry I don't have the data to show you and prove it to you on the white papers and whatnot, but it's a thing. It's a thing. But again, there's not enough attention when it comes to men's health, physical and mental health, because we're blokes. We just suck it up. This is just the way it is, right? And I don't think it should be that way. So I'd like to see, you know, more money, you know, spent on these kind of initiatives to help blokes, because men are struggling. I'll tell you now, I go and I'm a part of a couple of men's groups that support men with mental health issues. And it's extraordinary how underfunded it is and how little of it there is out there, you know? So anyway, That's my gripe.
I like it. I like it. I feel exactly the same. And it's, yeah, it's easy to ignore men's health. And, you know, there's a whole rabbit hole debate about medicine and their priorities there, but for another day. But I guess before we wrap up, for anybody that likes your vibe and wants a bit more of you, where can they find you on the internet?
They can go to Tony Jack Mance on Facebook. You can get me there. I think I've reached my friendship limit or close to it.
Popular man.
Maybe. But they can get me on Messenger. On Instagram, I'm on Mastering Music, Mastering Life. I don't do a lot of Instagram. I kind of stick to Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I'm about to launch my speaking. I'm embarking on a career now as a public speaker. And you'll be able to find the website at tonymance.com if you want to go have a look at that.
Fantastic. I'll pop all of those links down below. So if anybody wants to scroll down, click those links, jump into your world, they can. I've appreciated you being here. But before we roll out, what is one piece of health information you wish more people knew about?
Better nutrition. Just getting better educated when it comes to nutrition. And you don't really need to be an expert or a dietitian. As I said before, eat natural, clean food. Even if you're a vegan, just eat real stuff that came from the tree or the plant or under the soil. And don't muck around with all this fake meat and processed food and all this kind of stuff. So keep it clean, keep it natural, and, you know, keep the environment as clean as possible.
Fantastic.
So that's the foundation of everything, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I agree. And you're in the right place. I totally agree, especially with the nutrition one. Everything we've talked about, we're on the same page. So thanks for being here. Thanks for your time. And I hope we can do it again in the future.
A pleasure, Matty. I know it took us a while, but I'm glad we got there. It was lovely to finally have a conversation with you. And I always thought that you and I would relate and share similar values. So, yes, it was a wonderful experience. I hope people got some value out of what I had to share with them today. And once again, thanks for the opportunity. It was great fun.
Not a problem, mate. You're very welcome.
Good on you, mate.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast, simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.